right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots to talk about tonight. Hope you all had a nice extra day off this weekend, the Labor Day weekend. We were off also Monday, so happy to be back and talk about a full opening weekend of college football and look forward to the start of the NFL season, which kicks off tomorrow night. And after all of the histrionics in the NFL and off the court or off the field in the NFL in the offseason, Tom Brady is going to play tomorrow night, of all things. So it'll be a fun few hours leading into that game, talking about all the cheating that the Patriots have done, because we now have a new article out saying how much cheating they've been doing, which I think we pretty much all knew. But in the meantime, we're going to stick here local and look at the Hoosier football team, who opened up their season Saturday afternoon at home in Memorial Stadium against the FCS team, Southern Illinois. Should note, Southern Illinois was a 6-6 team, beaten by a couple touchdowns by Purdue last year, also beaten by several ranked teams that they have on their schedule. It's a difficult FCS schedule, and they lost 5 ranked teams in addition to Purdue last year. So 6-6, 500. They come into Indiana, having beaten the Hoosiers almost 10 years ago. So it's been quite a while. Obviously, the roster has turned over completely. Lots of high hopes for the Hoosiers, and Glass, it didn't take a whole heck of a lot of time for the Hoosier faithful to get stunned in this game, as we knew Nate Sudfeld was back. The offense, a lot of promise there, a lot of question marks on the defensive side. But we come out of this game, and certainly come out of early in this game. You go into halftime having given up 32 points and almost 400 yards. Still a lot of questions about the defense, if not a lot of head shaking about the defense and the special teams, because there's a blocked punt in addition. So I'm not sure we know anything more about Indiana football, and certainly nothing that's necessarily good more.
Fine with me. A win is a win is a win is a win is a win. If Indiana finishes the year 6-6 or better, no one's going to care or remember what happened in this game. Dave, it's a team that we talked about most all of this month, or last month as well, saying it had plenty of question marks. And I don't think that one game was going to solve those, and I don't think that anything other than a win would be worth talking about today. But the thing I think that's most important about it is simply it is a victory. And Indiana, the team, will have their attention all week by the coaching staff. It's not a game where you win 48-3 and you think you're fat cats and Florida International's coming to town. Well, they won last week as well. So in the grand scheme of things, I'll take it, because you have to take it. You don't want to sit here and have to explain away. We did radio back then in 2006, and we had to explain why Indiana got beat by Southern Illinois.
We talked to Jerry Kill before the game.
We did. He was on this program before the game telling us why they were good and how they were going to come in and then play hard and do all that. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that was Southern Illinois' bowl game, but they don't get many opportunities to go play teams like this to grab a scalp this big. You know, no Big Ten team is ever going to come to their place and do it. And you know, with the conference scheduling the way it's going moving forward, these games will disappear, at least for the Big Ten, in the short future. There's not going to be any more 1AAs on there. There's going to be more big boy games on there. So you knew you were going to get their best shot, and you knew that when they came to town, that it wasn't going to be gimmicky. It wasn't going to be anything out of the ordinary, like a Navy. When Navy comes in, you say, geez, you know, how do you get really ready for that?
Right. Completely
that,
different.
And offense. That was disappointing for it. And I think the two things that bother you the most about this game was, number one, the big plays they came up with and the frequency which they happened. And the second thing would be, I think, the second half adjustment, because you have to give some credit where credit is due, because Indiana played much better in the second half, both offensively and defensively. So it wasn't a team that you'd been blown full of smoke saying, hey, look, I like this team. Coach Wilson said, I like the way they've worked all spring. I like the way they've been in the gym all summer. I like the way the fall camp has gone. And they did show some resolution in the second half, if you will. But I think it's the first game jitters. And if you want to go back under Wilson's 5 openers, I think there's been one really good one. last year.
Right.
And that's been about it. Was the
year
last
before, year? We creamed them. Oh, we creamed Indiana State
49-3 or 52-10 or something.
Oh, yeah. Insane. But,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
There hasn't been a lot of them. Right. Wasn't there an Eastern
There's
Kentucky
been some
in there that was goofy
absolutely.
And a Ball State in there that wasn't real?
They lost, yep.
Yeah, so this hasn't been a hot starting team per se. And luckily the game is 60 minutes long, and Hoosiers took full advantage of all 60 minutes of those to put up a W. And there's always going to be questions because you're not talking about a team that's ranked in the top 25. You're not talking about a team that has any kind of expectations moving forward of greatness. So there's a reason why those things happen on the field, because they're not where they need to be. They need to get better. They need room for improvement. And they've shown in multiple facets of the game that there is plenty of room for improvement. It's how you finish the season. It's not how you start it. I'm not giving them a pass per se, but they won the football game. They stood up when they had to be counted. That's been one of the things you have seen from this defense in the last couple of years in games where you don't have to play great the whole 60 minutes, but make a play. If it's only one, if it's two, whatever it is. They made one at the end of the game, blew up a play at the goal line, and, again, saved a victory. Not perfect, but I don't think it's the end of the world either. Game one, week one, always has stuff you're going to have to fix.
333-2665 is the phone number. Ultimately, Indiana is the victor, 48-47, by virtue of a couple plays in particular that were untimed, oddly enough. The two-point conversion towards the end of the game with 18 seconds left in the game that goes and hits the chest of the wide receiver, Andre Brown, the freshman cornerback, right there to make a play on it.
He wasn't in the end zone when he caught it, that's for sure.
He was not. It was going to be close if he caught it. Yep. He dropped it. Didn't matter. It goes awry for Southern Illinois at that point. They also missed a kicked extra point earlier
they
in
did.
The game that forced them to need
second
to go
half.
For two at this particular moment. So interesting at that point. Look, there's no way. Look, we'll talk about good. There was some good in this game. I'll talk about that here in a little while. There's no question. But you can't come out of that game without looking at some of the ugliness that is giving up 32 points to Southern Illinois in the first half, that is giving up 659 total yards, which is 3 yards short of a Memorial Stadium all-time record from an opponent. That record was set last year, 662 yards, by Michigan State, who's a top-five team when they came to Indiana. This is a 1AA team, if you will, and a average one at that. I think this is a better team than average this year.
Yeah.
But last year was a 6-6 team that really didn't do much of anything to interest you. They came in and they're 3 yards short of your all-time stadium record on offense. And this wasn't – it was a couple big plays, but it wasn't only that. They rushed for 248 yards. They had 148
yards
on two plays. We had 128 yards on two plays. So there's a lot of offense in this game.
And it didn't help.
Very little defense in this game. And we have to come out of there wondering what's going on with the defense that we heard was going to be so much better.
Well, let's be fair. 10 minutes before kickoff, 15 minutes before kickoff, an email was circulated through Indiana sports media, through the football program, and it had defensive players suspended.
Mm-hmm. And important ones.
Darius Latham was one of those. And T-Gray Scales was another.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Gooch, guys that were going to play to some degree.
Ralph Green.
Ralph Green you probably knew was coming.
Kind of figured Ralph Green with his transgressions.
And then you figure
the
out
season.
When you're sitting down there on the field watching warm-ups, well, there's Chase Dutra in a knee brace that goes from his hip to his ankle.
Right.
And there's Rashad Fant being walked off, I think, in the second quarter or
third. It was late third, I think.
Okay, but he had no idea what planet he was on.
Yeah.
So you lose, again, your quarterback of your defense, who we've heard nothing but good things from throughout all the offseason, all the camp, everything else.
At a position where you have a whole bunch of players that are gone from last year.
And a whole bunch of young kids taking those spots, and you wonder why you get beat on big plays in the backfield and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys that didn't have a ton of experience filling those holes, and the communication wasn't good. Yeah, there were breakdowns, and that's what happens when you don't have it all working. So you lose essentially 2.5 starters. I'll give T-Gray Scales a half a start. You knew Dutra was starting, and you knew Latham's going to start.
Dutra was going to play a lot.
Scales going to play a ton of plays.
Dutra was going to play a lot, and Green and Latham in particular, the top two at
that
spot.
After seeing who played in place of Dutra, I couldn't imagine him not playing every down.
Oh no, he would have played
in that game.
So
that's one starter. Latham's starter number two, and it's the old issue with Indiana football. And I joke about it on this program. I joke about it in the mornings with Joe. It would be nice to have 1 year where you would just where
everything
you could
would work out.
Where you could just start maybe one game and have everybody there and see if it works. But it seems like it's another step in adversity, self-inflicted wounds. I'm not blaming Coach Wilson for suspending the guys or getting injured. That's what happens. It's a game that you have to do it. But again, Indiana showed glaringly, Dave, that the depth just isn't in that position. And what's the old joke? Where do you always suffer the first injury? In the weakest spot on your team. It's a magnet. How it knows, I don't have any clue. And those factors, you line them up, and 659 yards later, well, there's your answer.
There's good and there's bad to talk about, but the bad is always what gets you on a radio show. So we'll talk a little bit more about the defense when we get back. We will talk the good eventually because there was some, and then we'll look towards the Colts when we get back also. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. You're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Quick programming note, we got Reds baseball coming up right after the show as the Pirates are in town. We'll have them again over the weekend also. Saturday, they will be facing the Cardinals.
Cardinals beat the Cubbies today. Kyle Schwarber returned after missing about a week with a rib cage injury. And tough debut, 0-for-4. The golden sombrero, all four, resulting in the letter K.
Uh-huh.
He did that a couple weeks ago. Then he hit three home runs his next two or three games.
He's cooled off like you would expect.
Yes.
But he's still hitting
They have
some
a
bombs.
Book on him now.
Absolutely.
And that's the whole thing. He's going to have to figure out. Usually the first one back is the toughest one, and facing Carlos Martinez from the Cardinals is never an easy task, or anybody on the Cardinals for that matter. So Cubby fans might be rooting for the Reds. So will Cardinal fans. And Reds and Cardinals, Dave, on the weekend. How about that? So, again, the Reds going to have a say in the National League Central race. And we will give away a pair of tickets for Friday night's game. Reds and Cardinals, 7:10 at the Great American Ballpark here in just a couple of minutes. So stay tuned for that. So if you want to get away from a home football weekend here in Bloomington or a north-south football, if football's not your thing, we got counter-programming, so to speak. And we'll do that when we get to our next break.
Indiana does have a Saturday night game against Florida International. We'll talk a little bit about that also in a little while. But first, victors 48-47 over Southern Illinois by virtue of a missed two-point conversion. Southern Illinois going for the win with 18 seconds left.
You got to do that.
Unsuccessful. But looking at the Indiana defense, I go back to it again. 659 yards given up by Southern Illinois. This was not all big plays. Certainly there were some big glaring plays that everybody saw, an 80-yard screen pass, a 68-yard pass to a tight end. There was some ugliness, but 659 yards, 3 yards short of a Memorial Stadium record that was set last year by a top five or top 10 Michigan State team. For Southern Illinois, that's the frustrating thing at this point in time. 11 of 17 on third downs, 248 yards rushing. So it was not 600 yards through the air because that's all they could do. No, the problem that I have, and we'll talk about everything I saw watching the game and then watching the tape on Indiana defense. The problem that I had most of with the Indiana defense in this game is, at this point in time, with finally some defensive linemen, some linebackers coming back as like third-year, fourth-year type of players, yes, you're missing a couple of them. I get that. But you have some players coming back, some experience coming back in that front seven. They got pushed around up front and really didn't get a lot of pressure up front. They did throw some blitzes in, so this was not completely vanilla from Brian Knorr and the defensive staff. They threw some stuff at Southern Illinois, and Southern Illinois came out to their credit with a great game plan, took advantage of some over-aggression, got some big plays. But more importantly to me looking forward is, are the re-addition of guys like Darius Latham, Ralph Green, Tigray Scales, Greg Gooch. These are guys that are going to play. They're not necessarily all Big Ten guys, but they're guys that are going to play and play a lot. Is that going to make that big of a difference physically? Because this team got pushed around all day long on that side of the ball to the tune of 659 yards by an FCS team. I can't get past that. Looking forward to this team. You and I knew they would struggle.
I knew that
some of the stuff in the offseason wasn't going to be all
right.
Roses and golden rainbows and stuff like that. It was going to be more of a struggle than people thought, but not like this.
Well, you'd obviously want those guys in there before you gave an assessment of how it's going. And again, they put themselves in a situation for whatever reasons, what it was, a cornucopia of events I heard led to these. It wasn't all connected to one thing. So, again, if guys aren't playing by the rules, they don't have a choice, and that's put their team at risk. That's put them at risk. And we know what happens if you get in trouble a couple times around here now. None of it's any good.
Right.
So, again, the team suffers to a degree. But the thing I thought I saw early in the game, which isn't surprising this time of year, and it isn't surprising, it was a ton of over-pursuit. Guys, yes. just simply not doing their job. And that's why I think I'm not – the numbers are gross. I got it. I cannot possibly argue, and I'm not going to try to dress up 659 yards. I'm not going to do it. But to your point of can they fix it, I think it is, because I don't think it was anything physically in the sense that, oh, geez, they can't compete at this level. It's, hey, I'm going to hide it in here. They're going to go that way, and I'm going to go that way.
What you're talking about with that and the tackling,
the quarterback,
reminded
right.
me of the Navy game
yeah,
from 2 years
chasing
ago, where
shadows.
It was a lot
sure.
of just sliding on the ground.
Fired up, ready to go. It's a hot
there
day.
Was a
you're
lot
you're
of
crunked. You're up, and you're in it. I think that's fixable, and I think the tape is going to show them that, hey, look, you need to be here, not over here chasing the football. You have responsibility. Remember, we did that all right. camp, and you got too excited, and you want to be part of the gang tackle because we're all rushing the football, we're all getting to the ball on time, we're all celebrating together. Mm-hmm. You got to remember to do your job, and you can't do two other guys' job for them. If you're in the secondary especially, you can't cheat because the other guy's not doing his job. Right. You have to stay in your spot, and that's guys that don't have a lot of snaps. That's guys being jacked up. Isn't it an excuse? It absolutely is an excuse, but if they don't give up 659 yards against Florida International, they give up 359 yards, they're going to have to get some credit for being a little bit better. I think that stuff is fixable. Now, what stuff bothers you is the one-on-one stuff where you can't get any pressure on the quarterback
yeah.
when you're blitzing. You
Absolutely.
Get one sack.
Again, that was a nice offense.
It was a nice offense.
I could almost go as far as saying that after watching a tape on FIU this week, which I watched that game also, that Southern Illinois offense is probably more diverse than what
yeah.
we'll see out of Florida International. I don't know if it'll be
well,
better.
How many guys touched
I think
the
it'll
ball
be more
on
diverse.
Southern Illinois' team? 52?
They had nine rushers. I mean, they did. They had a lot of guys. They ran a couple different guys in the
sure.
Wildcat. They did a lot of nice things, and they deserve credit for that. There's no question.
And what's the old joke?
It's the physical part up front that bothers you as a fan.
What, Mangieri get the only sack in the game? Is that it?
I think
third
that's
quarter,
correct.
Third and eight, something. It was a good play. Yeah. Again, situational defense wasn't horrible in this game, but a lot of it in between it was bad. So, yes, Indiana missing Latham and Green up front. You knew Green wasn't going to play, so I'm going to leave him out of this. But Latham is a guy that has caused problems at Big Ten level before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's going to help you immediately. Tigray Scales might be the most athletic linebacker they have. And again, when you've got guys running sideline to sideline, which they did, you miss him chasing sideline.
Well, they can
to
certainly
sideline.
Use his speed. They can certainly use the depth on the inside. He's really the only interior linebacker they were missing. So, I mean, most of those guys are the guys that you're going to see. He is a nice player. I said before the season, I said last week, to me, the linebacker spot is a spot that I think has a lot of promise. It's young, but it has a lot of promise. And again, when you've got youth and you've got this at the safety, you've got this at the cornerback position right now, when you have youth, you're going to have mistakes. There's no question about that. But at the end of the day, what you've got is you win by a point on a missed two-point conversion at the end. You gave up 659 yards to a team that fumbled the ball twice, missed a two-point conversion, missed a field goal, and also missed a regular kicked extra point. Defensively, and Coach Wilson has come out and said,
great,
I mean, he
threw
everybody under the bus on this one, too. I mean, there's got to be something that improves out of the end of this. Is it getting the players back? There's no question that there's more quality on the field when those guys are out there. Those are two guys at one defensive tackle position. That position is going to get better by having those two guys out there. Assuming, of course, that these guys aren't suspended because of issues that are going to carry over onto the field. But
well, Scales is not playing
but
next week,
and
then
so Scales is not.
Out.
Dutcher, we don't know about yet. He's an injury situation right now, so we don't know about that.
That was an awfully big brace to be out 1 week.
Those things have got to get better. Looking at the offense, there was a huge question mark, two huge ones, but one in particular that I keep bringing up that everybody else has been glossing over and saying it's been great, and that was the offensive line, because to me, I needed to see it. I'm here to tell you, on the offensive line, it's an FCS defense they played. I don't think it was a particularly great one other than the one linebacker. To me, the offensive line lived up to every billing they've given them so far in the offseason. Every single one.
And you heard Jordan
they were fantastic.
Howard talk about that as well.
Now,
guys
again,
blocking well.
I say it again. It was an FCS defense.
Sure.
I wasn't that impressed by them. But the offensive line did everything you have wanted. And we've gone into some of these games in the last decade or so and come out of them against 1AA teams and said, yeah, we got physically manhandled up front, and that shouldn't happen again in that situation. This was not the case here. The offensive line was everything they described. The tight ends were fantastic. Out wide with some young wide receivers, there were some missed blocks. But in the running game, I thought they did a pretty darn good job getting downfield and blocking. That's something we've missed last year also when you have a lot of graduations. I thought blocking-wise, I've got no complaints whatsoever about the offensive line. And that's one thing I desperately wanted to see here. I wanted to see an offensive line you talked about all offseason being one of the best in the Big Ten act like a Big Ten offensive line against an FCS team, and they did that.
Yep, they did. Gave Howard enough holes to run in, Redding enough holes to run in, and Sudfeld had enough time to throw. So he had a pretty clean day, and Sudfeld ran a little too much for everybody's liking, I believe, in that game. But, well, he saw the other quarterback taking off when there's nobody around him, so he got a little antsy there and did it. But
he made a couple big plays with his feet, by the way.
He did.
In a game that ended up a one-point game.
Yes, and they all count. And Ricky Jones Jr.? I got to get all my J's lined up. I can't remember what it is. But, yeah, again, now you see why they were so disappointed, why he hasn't played the last couple of years due to injury, because there's obviously something about him. He can play at this level. That's the good news. You had the freshman block the field goals. That'll help out. We'll throw a little credit in there. But offensively, they're balanced, Dave. They didn't have to run 50 passes. They didn't have to rely on this. And Jordan Howard did everything you'd hope for him to do, 145 yards or so in his first game. Moving the chains, Redding came in, gave you a little pop between the tackles. Yep. It was nice to see. And Indiana, I don't remember any turnovers. Am I missing one? No turnovers.
Block punt.
That's a turnover in my world.
Consider that a turnover. Yeah, it's not an offensive situation. It's not an official
stat. Yep. Right. You're going to lose the ball in possession anyhow. You just prefer to do it without giving up 6 points.
Yes.
That's what you prefer there. So you get the block field goal. That again, huge play in a game that ends a one-point game. But, yeah, Indiana looked balanced offensively. It didn't look like they were struggling. It looked like they were getting into it. And you heard Sudfeld talk after the game about, hey, I felt really comfortable back there. Mm-hmm. I was going to coaches and telling them, look, change it. This is what I see. It's not working. We're doing something else. And that's what you want out of a fourth-year guy, leader-type guy. But those changes he made work on the field, which I thought was positive.
And we did mention last week, this is only the 13th start Sudfeld, and he showed you about three or four spots where he put a ball out there that could have very easily been a touchdown the other direction.
Yep.
He got away with it. And there's a huge difference between making the mistake and getting away with it and making the mistake and not getting away with it.
His bad throws need to get worse. They need to be guys' feet, not at waist level.
He had four that I can recall,
outs,
and one of them, a guy was going to jump all over and out, and he did. He put it in the ground, and that was the smartest thing he did all day.
There was another one that hit a guy like in the hip.
There was two or three other ones where it was a little
dicey.
That's
got to go out.
Absolutely.
That's got to go over the head of the bench, or it's got to go into the ground and just eat it and start over. Yep. But again, 13 starts, live football. How many times did he get hit in the offseason? I'm going to guess a whopping zero. Yeah, exactly. So again, these are all things that
he was very good otherwise. Again, when you get away with the mistakes, you can talk about how good he played, and he did. He was very good. The offensive line was very good. The running backs were everything they've been talked about. Yep. The wide receivers, to me, stepped up. There was one drop that I can think of. That's going to happen in any game. It was kind of a key one at the time, but it's not the
what was
a lot
Indiana
of skin off
third
the
down.
Indiana, this is the one area where you nitpick a little bit. They're
great.
5 of 13.
Yeah.
They did not pick up a lot of those. They had their own big plays. There's no question. 71-yarder at the towards the end of the game there. They got the lead back or real
How
close
to. How
do
you let that guy get behind you?
I don't know. That's part
terrible.
Of your issue.
But again, they took advantage of it.
All kinds of offense.
And Jones went and got the ball. That was a great part either. Didn't wait for it. He went and got it. And the other special team thing that bothered me, and this is real nitpicky, how many games has Mitchell Page played?
Yeah.
Two? Three? 5 minutes to go, you're getting the ball back up seven. Call the fair catch.
Yeah, don't take
You got six guys lining up to hit you.
Don't
call the fair catch. That's a situational play. That again, that's going to get better next week.
Yeah. At least
simple fix on film.
At least he caught it.
He did.
So some of that was sewn up somewhere. Thank God for that. We got to take another quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. You're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Congratulations, Jay Williams. He's heading to the Reds and Cardinals game on Friday night. We still have some other tickets to give away a little bit later in the month of September for some games here a little bit later in the month. So stay tuned for all that, and we'll get you down to the Great American Ballpark, Reds and Cardinals. That's Jay's big game on Friday night.
We got some programming notes here for you. We got Reds
Lots
baseball coming up right after the show, 7 o'clock, with Pittsburgh in town.
But we've also got the NFL opener tomorrow night, Pittsburgh at New England.
The cheating Patriots.
Tom Brady will be playing. They will be taping every practice that Pittsburgh has leading up to this. I'm certain of that. And all the signals during the game, as we've found out. Pre-game tomorrow night, 7:45, kickoff at 8:30.
That'd be like being a Lance Armstrong fan, wouldn't it? Yeah. Oh, man, that's my boy. Look at him ride. He's killing everybody in the tour. Remember that one time the guy fell off his bike and Armstrong
got
off his bike and
just waited
for
wagons
him?
Like sports fans of their cheating teams.
It's unbelievable. Anybody from that area is like, oh, dude, you just don't understand.
Way,
it's a witch hunt. You're out to get
that's
us.
Right, man.
Hey, you know what? There's a reason why.
Ain't cheating, ain't
and
trying.
I said this morning. There's a reason why Belichick wins a lot of games with a lot of no-name players.
Yeah.
There's a big reason
Absolutely.
For it. Because
and every time you come out of a game, you go, man, they look like they knew it was
and
coming.
And you know what?
Because they
Let
did.
Me add one more thing to that. Remember the fat guy went to Notre Dame with a decided schematic advantage?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess he didn't take his talents from Beantown to the college
Somehow
game.
Somehow he didn't have the video
work,
team.
Because it didn't work at anywhere he stopped in college football,
no,
by the way.
Exactly right. And, of course, we've got one other big game over the weekend here. Friday night, the crosstown rivalry, North at South. And Chalk Talk is 6:30 with both coaches and kickoff at 7 o'clock for the 50th meeting, 5-0. All time for North and South, the big crosstown rivalry. That's our Friday night schedule. And then we'll have the Reds again on Saturday with St. Louis in town, 1 o'clock pregame for that. And then, of course, we'll have Colts on Sunday, 1 o'clock
Sunday,
on
Sunday,
the road.
Sunday.
12 o'clock pregame, 1 o'clock on the road.
Bob Lamy. Tough game with Buffalo.
At Buffalo. It's an interesting looking game. It is. Buffalo's defense,
Buffalo's
you know, is
defense.
Going to be good. And we'll talk about the Colts here in a little while. Blah. We're talking a little IU football. We've got Bob on the phone. Bob wants to talk about the Colts. We can talk about
we'll
the Colts.
Get, we'll
it's all football,
Bob,
pigskin. What, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, I don't want to break up your schedule, guys.
No, you're fine.
Good. Go ahead.
Hey,
it's
our
football, right?
Our schedule was broken up on Labor Day, so we've got to cram it all into 43 minutes tonight.
Right.
So I hope you had a good Labor Day, Bob.
I had a great Labor Day. Thank you, Glass. I appreciate it. I have a question, just a comment, or your comments about, I haven't heard the whole thing, but what happened with Reggie Wayne, and why in the world do you think he left the Patriots? I mean, he signs up this nice contract, and then all of a sudden, bam, he wants to be released. And I guess I read online that it was a mutual decision, but why do you think
I think it saves. I think it saves Reggie face that he's probably old, and I think it saves the Patriots having to get around that issue.
Look, we watched Reggie last year.
Playing with one arm.
Reggie's one of my absolute favorite Colts.
Impossible
since
not to
I've
love.
Been watching them play here in Indianapolis. It was pretty obvious that he had lost a lot last year. And he was injured playing last year, but it was also the situation with a knee injury coming off of that age at that point. For a receiver, it gets to be difficult. His hands are always fantastic, but he's having trouble catching the ball because of his tricep situation. To me, I think it's hard for the Patriots to not see that right off the bat when they get him in camp.
Well, here's the
and so to me, he's not going to be a fifth or sixth wide receiver and stay around and
play special teams,
all that sort of thing. So I think it just had to happen.
Bob, what happened here is, number one, the Patriots saw he couldn't perform at this level. Number two, out of respect for him, didn't if it came to a mutual decision, what it does is it gives the allure to other teams that maybe Reggie's not completely done yet, just doesn't fit the Patriots.
He's got to be a top three receiver at any organization to not play special teams and get away
right.
with it. And you're not going to do that to a 36-year-old Reggie. You're not
so I think the Patriots had a pipe dream that they thought, hey, we can A, get some more information on the Colts and Andrew Luck, and B, maybe Reggie
Probably
will
not.
Be able to contribute, and then unfortunately they get nothing. So it's tough for Reggie. The toughest thing to do is watch really good guys get old and get old right in front of you. And sadly, you've seen it with Jerry Rice. You've seen it with some other great players.
It happens.
Well, Father Time's undefeated. He just doesn't lose. And, again, if you're not playing quarterback in the National Football League or a long snapper, you get into that mid-30 range and there's just not a ton of years left, especially at a premium athletic position. And like Dave mentioned, if you're not in that top three, you have to do other duties that you don't read about in the front page of the paper. Those are always on the back pages.
So you're saying you think that the Patriots signed him up with all this money?
Well, he wasn't
just to see how he was.
Yeah, you can't go to camp without a contract.
How he's going to do, and then see that he just wasn't the potential that they wanted him to be, so now they decided they want to let him go.
Yeah, and to be fair, it wasn't tons of money.
Right.
But I think they probably save most of the salary, if not all the salary. They have to deal
it's
with
a
the signing bonus.
Problem, right.
They've got to deal with that against the cap, but it was not that big of a signing bonus.
And if they say it's mutual.
I want to say it was around $500,000, I read.
And if they say it's mutual, again, that's doing Reggie a nice favor, because if Patriots come out and say can't play, that knocks right. down his chances of signing somewhere else.
The
down
Patriots
the road.
Offense the last couple of years has fluctuated between all power and tight ends and five wide receivers and a lot of speed on the field. And Reggie doesn't really fit into either of those right now. Love Reggie to death.
Reggie would be great on a team with a bunch of young receivers where he would be encouraged to play a coaching father-type role and help guys learn to be a pro, and a team that didn't mind to spend a few bucks on that. Yeah. A team that's going to be 8-8 this year.
Maybe a team that's a 3-4 defense that's got a lot of linebackers and play special teams also.
Right.
I mean,
that's a good point.
The fourth and fifth wide receivers have to play special teams. That's why Gerf Whalen
made it
is on this team right
Carter.
Now than over Durant Cutters. He's just more sure on special teams.
Yep. Good call, Bob.
I guess my thought was real quick, and then I'll go.
Yeah, you're fine. No, you're fine.
You know, he signs to the Patriots, right? And then I'm hearing all these bad things from Colts fans, thinking he's a traitor and the whole nine yards. And I thought maybe Reggie's seeing that and then he leaves, but apparently that's not the case.
I'd be a little surprised by that.
If Reggie Wayne,
or he might want to retire as a Colt. I don't know. I just was curious.
Reggie found out as well that if Belichick can't fit him into his magical systems, where else is he going to play?
Bob, thanks for the phone
call.
Good job,
Bob.
We appreciate
it. It's tough. It's tough to tell Reggie, hey, you might be finished.
It was tough to watch him in that jersey. I mean, let's be fair about that. As Colts fan, none of us wanted to see that, and I still don't like the fact that he did it. I'm happy it didn't last very long.
Reggie Wayne's going to go into the Hall of Fame as a Colt.
Reggie's going to be around here doing something in no time flat.
And that's the good news, because he's part of the Colt family. And speaking of the Colts roster, I think that's the interesting part of their weekend that we saw.
Yeah.
The 53-man roster is out and put together. And
there's a lot of interesting there.
Huge, huge questions across the board on that. Where do you want to start? You want to start on your favorite part, the defensive line?
Let's look at it, because while I was impressed by what I saw out of the two rookies out of Stanford, to throw them into your
Here's
starting lineup
plate.
On day one and cut the majority of your defense. Let's not forget they lost Corey Redding in the offseason.
Yes, Arthur Jones
then
is
you
now
get
gone.
Rid of Arthur Jones has got an
done.
Ankle injury, so he's done for the year. you lose him, that's not on purpose, obviously.
No.
But you get rid of Montorio Hughes and Josh Chapman, your two main nose
Pagano
tackles.
Pagano was high on Chapman earlier in the camp.
We've been hearing about Chapman and Montorio Hughes for the last couple of years. First of all, Montorio Hughes was a risk anyways coming out. Josh Chapman had a knee injury his senior year and played with it, and they knew he was going to be out for an entire year, so they waited a year on him anyways. So they took a couple gambles on these two guys, and here they are. I don't know if you say if they worked, because Josh Chapman did start several games in his career here, but now they're both gone, just released altogether. You're bringing in a couple guys, one guy that wasn't even on the team the entire
You
want to
hear it? Here it is. I got it right in front of me.
Another guy was in the FX NFL or something. I don't even know where this Earl A. Cohn.
This is Zach Kiefer from the Star. Five of the six defensive linemen have never played for this team. Four of the six have never played in the NFL. Three of the six weren't drafted.
Yeah.
That's your summary
Earl O'Kine, let me look this up. He was in two different leagues last year after being released before a game started in the NFL last year. He played for the Calgary. He was on the Calgary Stampeders roster for a month.
They love him some Canadian football.
A month he was with them. Then he signed in the offseason with the AFL, Orlando Predators, and then the Brooklyn Bolts of the FXFL, FXFL. Never heard of either one of those. So this is the guy that they brought in to be your backup defensive end to Kendall Langford. I still haven't figured out what the heck they're doing on this defense. I don't get it. I'm scared of what it means. Hopefully they see more out of this than we do.
The Stanford guys are smart.
I like the Stanford guys. They're good-looking players. Kendall Langford might be a fine player, but he was a lot like Ricky Jean-Francois.
Now, remember,
he was a fourth or fifth or sixth guy on a really good unit, which means he's not one of the top three or four guys on that unit, or they would have kept him.
And Arthur Jones, that doesn't help anything as well.
And that really hurts.
You can't.
Because they were counting on him.
You can't find a guy like that off the waiver wire. That's the problem. And as the Colts move forward, those guys are going to make or break. Robert Mathis returns. Let's not forget that.
At some point.
And
we don't know what he returns as.
Every report that I've seen from the beat writers say that he's in wonderful shape.
Good.
And is looking sharp, which he's going to need to do.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Colts are going to need.
You brought in Trent Cole. Jonathan Newsom was a nice surprise at pass rusher. So you've got three
Walden
guys, if Mathis is decent.
Right.
You got three guys that can rush the passer. That's a good position to be in, assuming that the old guys don't get hurt again, because Cole and Mathis have been around for a long time.
Exactly.
Got to take another quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Let's run through the programming notes again. 7 o'clock tonight, right after the show, Reds baseball. Tomorrow night, big night, as it is the opening night for NFL football this season, Pittsburgh at New England. Tom Brady will be playing at quarterback for New England, you might have heard. We'll have pregame 7:45 and kickoff at 8:30. And then Friday night, we've got North at South High School football. Chalk Talk 6:30 with both coaches and kickoff at 7 o'clock, the 50th 5-0 meeting of North and South. And then we'll have Reds baseball again, 1 o'clock on Saturday. So that gets you caught up. Colts, noon on Sunday for pregame, 1 o'clock kickoff against the Buffalo Bills on the road. Tough-looking little game there, as the Bills' defense has been good and will be better with Rex Ryan. You know that. Who knows what the offense will look like.
LeSean McCoy.
Yeah. For
that's
the Colts.
A little bit different angle.
They made a last-minute trade for a linebacker. So that tells you what they feel about their linebacker situation. Can we stop taking guys from crazy leagues and rugby and all this kind of crap? Like, we're still got the Daniel Adongo thing
practice
going on.
Practice squad.
I understand that.
Practice squad.
But stop, will you, already?
Practice squad.
I mean,
who
and
cares?
This Earl Okine?
You're mining for gold. The guy's going to get
three. FXFL. What does that even mean?
He's going to get three snaps a game, like every six defensive.
Is that broadcast on FX?
I don't have any clue. Just like every six defensive lineman, it's a guy that's going to play never.
Here's what I don't get more than anything else. You've got a guy who was an offensive tackle at Purdue and had a cup of coffee in the NFL, I believe, and Ryan Grigson. Why is he spent all of his time on corners and wide receivers? I mean, all the time and money is playmakers. He doesn't get the idea that you've got to have the lines. I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand. But again, I get it. You want to win. Yeah. You want to get to the playoffs. That is the goal. I get that. But ultimately, aren't we trying to win the whole thing?
Yep.
We heard for years about how Peyton Manning and everything was invested in Peyton and Reggie and Marvin and all that sort of thing. The whole point is when the offensive line started to suffer, they stopped being able to win a big game. And on defense, you know, it took extra human effort to win a Super Bowl from their defense that they didn't have all year long.
And again, most NFL teams aren't balanced. It's not the case. You are either one or the other, or and sadly in some cases, neither. And the Colts at least have a premium offense in a league that is designed to score points.
Well,
every rule is written for the offense.
It has a top three quarterback. That's the
every
question
rule
about that.
Is written for the offense. Every rule is designed to encourage point scoring and penalizing erroneous defense. So you might as well have a guy that can get you 350 yards when he rolls out of bed and doesn't need 50 completions to do it. That's the other good news there. So the Buffalo Bills, who's their quarterback? Tyrod Taylor,
okay. I think.
Rex Ryan said this morning that LeSean McCoy will play against the Colts. The Colts will see their old buddy Jerry Hughes, who they gave up on a few years ago. And
had a nice season for him last
year. Had a really good season when, again, you get other guys around you that play defense, and you have to worry about, hey, where's the big defensive tackle Darius from Alabama? Hey, where's Mario Williams on that end? Hey, no one pays attention to me over here.
Right.
Go ahead and play some football. It's interesting how
amazing
that happens.
How different Bjorn Warner and Jerry Hughes look compared to each
exactly
other
right.
in their situations
and,
right now.
And Colts fans would probably want neither of them. That's the the other side of that. But the secondary in Buffalo has always been very solid as well. Linebacker is again, their defense has been it because their offense has been so bad. You can just rattle off – you probably can't unless you're a fantasy nerd. Some of the quarterbacks they've had the last 4 or 5 years,
right,
and you sit there and you're like
– E.J. Manuel was a top draft pick.
12th overall pick or something ridiculous. What happened to their running running back, that the kid from Clemson. Where was it Clemson? Yeah, Clemson running
CJ
back.
Spiller. Yeah. He's, it's been a couple years for him.
But still, that's another high, high pick that doesn't pan
Sammy Watkins was a top five. Right. He's a nice player,
but he hasn't
had anybody to get it to him.
He can't throw himself the ball. That's the other problem with that. So you bring in LeSean McCoy, a proven running back in Philadelphia, obviously, with that Philadelphia offense was balanced. When Foles was throwing and he was running, you saw it last year to beat the Colts on the terrible pass interference where Wayne's jersey was pulled 20 yards off his shirt. But that's, again, the breaks you don't get sometimes. But, yeah, that team could obviously do something.
Are we blowing too much smoke up the Bills here, though, or the Colts
going
on the road here?
No, because going on the road, number one, is never fun in the NFL. Yeah. Number two, the Colts are a favorite. And number three, we've already mentioned a couple reasons why they might if Andrew Luck doesn't have a big day and that offensive line doesn't play well, the Bills would love to have you in a 16-13. We'll kick it last
don't,
to win.
Don't forget, we had problems with defenses already because our offensive line is all figuring each other out. And then you go up against a Rex Ryan defense.
Yep.
Let's get Andrew Luck out of this
game. The good thing about Rex Ryan's defense is Rex Ryan is still involved with the offense. And Tyrod Taylor and LeSean McCoy, you keep him in front of you. Again, that's not a dynamic Bills offense. So if the Colts – what's the Colts' best offense going to be this year? 21-3. They're ahead by 18 points. That gives the defense a little breathing room to put their ears back. But again, the first week out, tough. On the road, that's fine. But the Colts are going to have to play some good teams in the AFC. That's what happens when you have the best record. You have to play the best teams coming back.
Well, and the other side of this weekend for Indiana football fans is Indiana plays Florida International. And I'll tell you one thing.
F-I-U.
Again, one thing to pay attention here, folks, is this is an Indiana offensive line that was everything they had been made out to be against Southern Illinois. This FIU defense, that's what stood out this weekend.
Big upset.
How good they were up front, defensive front seven. So we'll see how well the Indiana team runs the ball. A lot of question marks here. If the running game slows down, Nate Sudfeld and those wide receivers, they continue to make those plays. It'll be interesting. This is no cakewalk. I thought before the season this would be one that maybe wouldn't be so hard. But after this weekend, it's hard not to look at this one and wonder.
Again, a paper upset. I don't know how – I can't tell you anything about Central Florida except George O'Leary coaches.
No, but they've got talent. They've got real good talent. And this was a BCS team 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah,
it wasn't that long ago.
It was. Blake Bortles.
That's exactly right.
And those guys. So, again, Indiana, I think, Dave, with the tight victory – with Florida International pulling the upset, they are as grounded could be. It's not 58-0 the other way where you start floating around hearing crazy stuff.
They should
It's not. So that's the good news. I think Indiana wins the ball game handily here at home. And a chilly. Florida's going to be cold.
I think it's going to be a tight one. They will. Indiana will win, but it will be a tight one. We'll give it a 10 points at the end of the day, 27-17. Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Monday, so tune in then. You've been in the zone.